Welcome back, everybody, for another deep dive. And today we're going to be tackling a case that I think is really interesting.
Yeah.
It's Williams v. Florida.
It's a big one.
It is a big one. And it's one that, kind of set a precedent for how we do trials now.
Absolutely. And especially for our listeners, we're talking about criminal trials, and this really changed the game.
Yeah. So Williams v. Florida, it all started out as a robbery case.
Yeah, so back in the 1970s, you have Johnny Williams, and he's on trial in Florida for robbery.
Okay.
And, at first glance, it seems like a pretty straightforward case.
Right. Just another robbery.
But what makes this case so fascinating is how it ended up at the Supreme Court.
What happened?
Well, his defense attorneys, they were clever. They saw a chance to challenge not just one,
Right.
but two fundamental parts of, the way trials worked.
Okay. So what were they?
Well, the first one they went after was Florida's notice of alibi rule.
Okay. The notice of alibi rule. Now, for someone who's not a lawyer, that sounds very technical.
Yeah, so basically imagine you're the defendant, you're saying, "Hey, I didn't do it. I was somewhere else."
Right, I have an alibi.
Exactly. But under this Florida rule, if you were going to use an alibi as your defense, you had to tell the prosecution about it beforehand.
What?
Like you had to give them notice, not just, "I was somewhere else," but like the details of your alibi and even who your witnesses were.
So you're saying that even before the trial even starts,
Yep.
you have to tell the other side what your defense is.
That was the rule in Florida at the time.
I see.
And Williams's team, they argued that this was a huge violation of his Fifth Amendment rights.
Oh, so the right against self-incrimination.
Exactly, because they're basically saying you're being forced to help the prosecution build their case against you.
Yeah, I can see how that would be problematic.
And this wasn't their only argument.
Oh, there's more.
They also went after the fact that Florida was using six-person juries.
Six-person juries.
Yeah, for cases that weren't capital offenses.
So not like death penalty
Yeah,
cases.
right. And this is different from the traditional 12-person jury.
Right, that's what we usually think of when we hear jury.
Exactly. And Williams's team, they argued that this violated the Sixth Amendment.
The right to a fair trial.
Yes, because they said a jury should have 12 people.
I see. So they're fighting this alibi rule, and they're pushing for a full 12-person jury.
That's right. They were fighting on two fronts.
So did they win?
Well, this is where things get really interesting. The Supreme Court actually ruled against Williams on both of these issues.
Wait, so they lost.
They did.
But you said this was a landmark case.
And that's the paradox of Williams v. Florida. By losing Williams actually set some major precedents that change the way trials work all over the country.
So even though he lost his case, it still had a huge impact.
Absolutely. His case ended up affecting everyone even to this day.
Okay, I'm even more curious now. So how did the court justify upholding this alibi rule?
Well, they said it was all about a fair trial.
A fair trial.
Yeah. The majority opinion was written by Justice White, and they said, look, this rule isn't about forcing someone to confess. It's about making sure that both sides have a fair chance to prepare for the trial.
So they're saying, like, it's only fair that everyone knows what the defense is going to be?
Right. They even talked about this idea of reciprocal discovery,
Reciprocal discovery.
which basically means both sides, the prosecution and the defense, they have to share information with each other before the trial.
Okay, so it's like a trade-off. You give me your alibi, I give you something else.
Yeah, the court thought this would lead to more transparency and ultimately a fairer trial.
I can see the logic there, but doesn't it still seem like the defendant is at a disadvantage here?
That's a really good point, and that was a big point of contention even among the justices themselves.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we'll talk about the dissenting opinions a bit later, but just know that not everyone agreed with this idea of fairness.
Okay, so that's the alibi rule.
Yeah.
What about the six-person juries?
Yeah.
How did they justify that?
Well, here, the court focused on what they saw as the main function of a jury.
Okay.
So instead of fixating on the size of the jury, they stressed its purpose, things like deliberation representing the community and preventing any one juror from having too much influence.
So it's more about what the jury does than how many people are on it.
Exactly. They even said that the most important part of a jury is that it's a group of everyday people who use their common sense to judge the case.
So like a group of peers.
Yeah, they really emphasized that collective wisdom, regardless of the exact number of jurors.
That's a pretty big change in how we think about juries.
It raises a lot of questions about whether this was the right call.
Yeah, I bet not everyone was happy about this. Were there any justices who really disagreed?
Oh, yeah, there were actually four different dissenting opinions
What the?
in Williams v. Florida, which shows just how much disagreement there was about these rulings.
Wow, four dissenting opinions. That's a lot. It sounds like this case really divided the court.
It did, and each dissent kind of focused on a different aspect of the case.
Okay, so let's break it down. What did they disagree about?
Well, Chief Justice Berger, he actually agreed with the majority on the alibi rule.
He did.
He even said that he thought this kind of rule would probably lead to more pre-bargains and fewer trials overall, which is interesting to think about now.
Yeah. Wow, that's pretty insightful considering how many cases end up with plea deals these days.
It is. So then you have Justice Marshall, who agreed about the alibi rule.
Okay.
But he had some serious concerns about the six-person juries, especially for more serious crimes. He argued that if someone could potentially go to prison for life, that's just too big a decision to be made by only six jurors.
That makes sense to me. Like, shouldn't those cases have the full 12-person jury?
He thought, so for him, it was a matter of fairness and that it was tied to the 14th Amendment.
Right, equal protection under the law.
Exactly. And then we have Justices Black and Douglas.
Yeah, okay.
And they took a really hard line against the alibi rule.
Oh, so they really disagreed with the majority on that one.
Yeah, they thought it was a straight-up violation of the Fifth Amendment.
Interesting. So they were really focused on that self-incrimination aspect.
Exactly. For them, it was about protecting the defendant's right to stay silent.
Right.
And they argued that forcing someone to tell their alibi and give up their witnesses was practically doing the prosecution's work for them.
So they felt like it shifted the burden of proof onto the defendant.
That was their argument. And finally, you have Justice Harlan,
okay,
who had a bigger worry about states basically trying to weaken federal rights.
Mm-hmm.
Just for the sake of convenience, he was concerned that this idea of efficiency was becoming more important than individual rights and that it could be a slippery slope.
Right. Like if we start cutting corners on constitutional rights, where does it end?
That was his fear. So you can see how Williams v. Florida, even though the defendant lost,
right,
it opened up all these important questions about fairness and the legal system.
Yeah, it's like even in losing, Williams kind of won by sparking this huge debate.
Exactly. And the impact of that debate is still being felt today.
Okay, so we've got the rulings, we've got the dissenting opinions, but let's get practical here.
Yeah.
How did Williams v. Florida actually change things for lawyers, especially those dealing with criminal cases?
Well, one big change was that reciprocal discovery became much more common.
So that idea of both sides sharing information before trial.
Right before Williams, it was kind of a guessing game.
Yeah.
But now there's a lot more emphasis on being transparent and sharing evidence.
So no more surprises at trial.
Ideally not, although there are always some exceptions.
Right.
But Williams v. Florida really helped solidify that principle of open discovery.
Okay. And that must have had a big impact on how lawyers prepare for trial.
Absolutely, both for prosecutors and defense attorneys.
I can imagine it's particularly tricky for defense attorneys who are trying to build an alibi defense.
You're right, because they know they're going to have to reveal their alibi and their witnesses in advance.
Right.
So it's like this balancing act between protecting their client's rights and potentially giving the prosecution too much information to work with.
Yeah, that's a tough spot to be in. And that brings us back to those Fifth Amendment concerns.
Yeah. That Justices Black and Douglas raised.
Right, about self-incrimination.
Exactly. So defense attorneys have to really think about whether presenting an alibi is the best strategy.
So is it ever a good idea to not present an alibi, even if you have one?
That's a tough question, and it really depends on the specifics of each case.
Okay.
Sometimes an alibi might be weak, or the witnesses might not be very credible.
Right.
And in those cases, disclosing that information might actually hurt the defendant more than it helps.
I see.
Other times, the prosecution's case might be so weak that an alibi isn't even necessary.
So it becomes a strategic decision.
It does. It's about weighing the evidence, the strength of the prosecution's case, and the potential risks involved.
So Williams v. Florida basically added a whole new level of strategy to preparing for trial.
It did. And this complexity also affects how prosecutors do their investigations.
How so?
Well, now they know they're going to get the defense's alibi, so they can adjust their approach accordingly.
Like they can try to find holes in the alibi.
Right. They can interview the defense witnesses, look for inconsistencies, or try to find evidence that contradicts the alibi.
So in a way, Williams v. Florida forced both sides to be more prepared and thorough.
That's a great way to put it. The stakes are higher and everyone has to step up their game.
Okay, so we've talked about pre-trial strategy, but what about the trial itself? How did these rulings affect what actually happens in the courtroom?
Well, one of the biggest impacts was, of course, on jury selection.
Right, because now you might have smaller juries.
Exactly. And especially for non-capital cases, this means that each juror's vote carries a lot more weight.
Yeah, with fewer people, each vote matters more.
Right. And that makes the process of choosing the jury even more important.
That's voir dire, right?
Exactly. Lawyers have to be really strategic about picking jurors who they think will be sympathetic to their side.
And this must be even more important in cases where the defendant could get a long sentence.
Absolutely. Remember how Justice Marshall argued that cases with life imprisonment should have 12 jurors?
Right.
Well, that argument didn't win. So in cases where smaller juries are allowed, the stakes are even higher.
Yeah, it seems like with fewer jurors, it might be easier for the prosecution to get a unanimous verdict.
And that's a debate that continues to this day.
Really?
Some legal experts say that smaller juries are more likely to make mistakes and that they don't represent the community as well as a larger jury.
But others disagree.
They do. Some people say that six-person juries can be just as fair and impartial
Okay.
and that they're more efficient, which is a benefit.
So it's another one of those trade-offs.
It is like so many things in the legal system. We're always trying to find a balance.
Yeah. Between being fair and being efficient, between individual rights and public safety.
It's a complex puzzle.
It is. And that's what makes Williams v. Florida so fascinating.
Yeah, it really makes us think about what it means to have a fair trial.
What the purpose of a jury is and how much power the government should have in these kinds of cases.
We've covered a lot today. The history, the legal arguments, the different opinions, the practical impact of the case. It's been a pretty thorough deep dive.
It has.
Right.
What are your final thoughts on Williams v. Florida for our listeners, especially those in the legal field?
I think the main takeaway is that this isn't just some old case that you learn about in law school.
Right.
It's still relevant today. It's a living precedent that affects how we practice law.
I agree. It shows how even those technical legal rulings
Yeah.
can have a ripple effect that impacts people's lives and changes how our justice system works. And on that note, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll look at how Williams v. Florida continues to influence legal strategies and what's happening in courtrooms in the 21st century. All right, so we're back and ready to wrap up our Williams v. Florida deep dive.
Yeah.
We've talked about the rulings, the dissenting opinions, the practical stuff, but there's one big thing we haven't really talked about yet, and that's technology.
Oh, yeah, that's a huge piece of the puzzle.
Right. I mean, this case was decided back in 1970.
Right. Think about it. No smartphones, no internet, no social media.
It's a totally different world now with all this digital evidence everywhere.
It really is. And it makes you wonder how a case from that time can still apply today.
Exactly. So how do we even begin to think about Williams v. Florida in the context of all this digital data?
Well, it's a challenge that courts are facing right now.
How so?
Well, the rules of discovery that we have, they were made way before the digital age.
Right. They weren't thinking about emails and text messages and all that.
Not at all. But now think about it. All that stuff can be evidence in a case.
Yeah, like your location data, your internet history, your social media posts.
And according to Williams v. Florida, some of that information might have to be shared during discovery.
Wow, that's a lot of personal information.
It is, and it raises some serious questions about privacy.
Right, like people might have stuff on their phones or computers that they don't want anyone else to see.
Exactly. And even if it's relevant to a case, it can feel like a huge invasion of privacy to have to hand that over to the government.
And that brings us back to the Fifth Amendment.
It does that protection against self-incrimination.
Right. So how do we balance the need for evidence with the right to privacy in this digital world?
That's the question everyone's trying to figure out, and it's something that's still being debated in courts.
It's like those same tensions that we saw in Williams v. Florida are even more complicated now because of technology.
Exactly. The amount of digital data we create is huge. And it's always changing, so the courts are constantly trying to adapt.
Yeah, we've seen cases about warrantless phone searches, social media posts as evidence, GPS tracking data. It's a whole new legal landscape.
It really is, and lawyers have to be up to date on all of it.
Right, not just to understand the evidence, but also to know the rules and the laws around it.
Exactly, and it's not just lawyers, judges, lawmakers. Everyone needs to be aware of these issues.
Because it affects all of us.
It does. It's about our rights and our freedoms in a digital world.
So what do you think the future holds for all of this?
Well, I think the law is going to have to change to keep up with technology.
Yeah, makes sense.
We might see new court rulings, new laws, maybe even changes to the Constitution.
To address these challenges.
Right. It's all about figuring out how to balance security and liberty in this digital age.
It's interesting how Williams v. Florida, a case from over 50 years ago,
Yeah.
is still so relevant today.
It is. It's like it laid the groundwork for all these debates we're having now.
It's a case that keeps on giving, even in the digital age.
I think that's a good way to put it.
Well, I think we've done a pretty good job of covering Williams v. Florida.
I think so, too.
We've talked about the facts, the reelings, the different arguments, the impact, and even how it relates to technology.
It's been a pretty thorough deep dive.
It has, and hopefully our listeners have a better understanding of this case and why it still matters today.
I hope so.
It's a reminder that even those old Supreme Court cases can have a lasting impact on our lives and on our legal system.
Absolutely. And on that note, I think we're going to wrap up this deep dive.
All right. So thanks to everyone for listening, and we'll see you next time.